The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon and Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Ed Morse is rolling out the red carpet in 2018 at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. General Manager Brian Danahy right now has his 2018 red carpet sales event. Lease a 2018 ATS sedan for a new low payment, just $279 a month, zero down. Or get 0% financing 60 months and up to $19,000 off all remaining 2017s. Kick off your new year in a new Cadillac from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or visit edmorsecadillactampa.com. See the dealer for all the details. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, right on Causeway Boulevard, now you can save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon with their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Start your search there. Thank you again to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon.
All right, here we go, baby.
Happy Thursday. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast, January 24th. The off-season marches on. What are we, 6.5 weeks or so from the free agency dinner bell, 7 weeks? It's
and
around
I'm,
the corner.
And I'm 1 week from a plane to Minneapolis, Stephen. 1 week.
And that voice you hear is the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman, the star of the show.
I'm going to Burlington Coat Factory. I'm ordering 2 winter coats. I'm going crazy.
Just wear clothing under your trench coat, Ira. That's really the bottom line. I'm Steve Isbitz. Lee DeKemper's here with JoeBucksFan.com. The podcast continues. We appreciate all those great comments we hear about this podcast and the ratings on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. Ira's here every Tuesday and Thursday for your listening pleasure. And Mr. Ira had breakfast with Derek Brooks last week. And Ira, we come in this as virgins to this story that you're going to tell us.
I've never heard you use that word since your high school days. Maybe grade school. Matter of fact.
Easy, Kevin. Easy. So, all right. So many one-liners available. Anyway,
I did sit down with Mr. Derek.
So,
Brooks.
What do you got, Ira? You had breakfast with Derek Brooks. You're talking Hall of Fame. You're obviously talking about all kinds of things. What is the nugget you want to share with us? This story.
We got to start this from the beginning because this is taking on imitations of the great stories when Puglisi told me to change my Bucks pick and stories like that. When Gruden said which one of those 25 2-yard carries by Allstott did you like the best? This one might be right up there. All right, Lee. I want to sit down with Brooks and Tony Dungy every year around this time until I can get John Lynch in the hall. And they've been helpful to me in the past, but things change every
year.
Not
helpful enough.
Yeah, not helpful enough, you know, but I'm always optimistic, always hopeful. And Lynch is back in the room for the 5th time in a row. I'm 0 for 4. I don't want to be the Mendoza line over here, Steve, which I think is 200. So
You're the Dave Kingman
Dave Kingman. All right.
The Hall of Fame.
So
room.
What day, you know, and so I check with Brooks, and he said, well, I'm wide open. Check with Dungy, and we'll work around Dungy's schedule. Dungy says, well, I'm wide open next, you know, last week. Check with Brooks. He's busier than I am. So Brooks says, Thursday, January 18th, 8:30 a.m., Old Memorial. Well, Old Memorial is that very exclusive private golf course near Citrus Park off Gun Highway. There's no sign for the damn place. You got to know where you're going. They like it like that, the members. Nobody knows that this thing's in the way to hell in the back over there. You go in the wilderness, you're passing 3 deers and 2 coyotes. All of a sudden, there's a spectacular golf course.
I've been out there.
Yeah. You've been out there, Stephen?
Wow. Absolutely. Sage.
All right. So anyway, Brooks picks January 18th, 8:30 in the morning. I check with Dungy. Dungy said, meet you there. Old Memorial. Got it. Well, gentlemen, you know my habits. I'm not used to fighting morning rush hour. Not used to it. Buck season starts up like 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. No problems. Well, now I got to be at Old Memorial at 8:30. I say to myself, I better leave a little early. It's probably a 35-minute drive, 40 minutes. I left an hour and 15 minutes. I left at 7:15. Lucky I did. Here we go. I start my commute. I go down my first local two-lane road.
Just so people know, you're the king of Newport Richie.
I'm the king of Newport Richie. Isbitz, within 90 seconds, a Lexus SUV behind me passes me on the double line, they're in a hurry. They can't handle it. It's foggy out. It's 28 degrees. Derek Brooks picked the coldest day in 7 years.
I thought you thought so much of him that he should be with the Bucks because he can predict everything.
Never mind that. Never mind that. You're trying to disqualify a man because he's not,
Al Roker.
Dennis Phillips over there.
Al Roker.
It's 28 degrees in my car. 28 degrees it reads.
Put the heat on, Sage.
Put the heat on. Now, the Lexus swings out. Now I'm cursing him. Bastard. I'm honking the horn.
Oh.
He's in a hurry. Now I'm halfway down this two-lane road, and I see that my windshield, you know, it's a little dirty. I got the light on. I got the headlights on. So I put the wipers on, and then I make the classic, and I mean classic, Kaufman faux pas.
Uh-oh.
I press the button for the washer fluid.
Nothing
and
there.
And the fluid flies out, and by the time it hits the windshield, it's frozen. It is absolutely frozen. I can't see out my windshield. Can't see. And I'm swerving all over the road. The Lexus guy's, he's looking in his rearview mirror. What the hell did I do to this guy? The guy behind me, he's honking his horn. What's going on? Luckily, I knew this road. I immediately try to put the defroster on, Steve, but, you know, it takes like 45 seconds to get that thing going. So for 45 seconds, I'm a blind man.
Oh.
I'm an absolute blind man. Somehow, you know, and I slowed down. I slowed down from 70, you know. No, I'm kidding. But I was going 30 miles an hour, and I make it. Now, finally, I get the gun highway, gentlemen. Gun highway.
This is before you get the gun, even.
This is even before gun. Now I get the gun highway, which usually moves pretty well, even at 7:30 in the morning, and I go a half a mile on gun highway, dead standstill.
Let me guess. Veterans is all backed
veterans,
up.
Veterans, black ice on the veterans.
Ooh.
Because now I'm putting the radio on. I got to get the traffic report, but it's too late. Black ice on the veterans. Everybody's getting dumped off the veterans. They're either going to Dale Mabry or they're going to Gun Highway. 15 miles, stop and go. Now, luckily, my windshield's fine. I can see. But there's nothing to see except the row of cars.
Red lights, yeah.
You know, and now I pass, you know, Lake Lutz Fern. Oh. I pass Van Dyke Road.
Dick Van Dyke.
But there's nothing to go on because I'm not going to Dale Mabry. I'm going to get, you know, Gun Highway.
Isn't it Lutz Lake Fern?
It might be. That's how discombobulated I am. 8:28, I make the turn into Old Memorial.
Whoa.
I'm right on time.
Yeah.
8:28. Should have been there about 7:47. So I pull in, and now I'm driving down this dirt road. You said you've been there. Little dirt road.
And it's supposed to be some hoi polloi joint?
Another SUV behind me. He swerves around me again on a double line, on a dirt road. He's got a tee time. He's got an 8:30 tee time. He was going down Gun Highway, too. He's all
pissed off. Wait a minute.
Whoa, there's
a double line on a dirt road?
Double line
they're
on
painting
a dirt road.
The dirt?
Well, you're there every week. Check it next time you're over there.
It's well-preserved. Old memorials, you know, well-preserved. The beautiful
the
old trees.
Right around me. Almost hits the deer. It's unbelievable. So I finally pull in, you know, a couple of people on the practice range. Now it's 29 degrees. It went up a degree. Coldest morning in 7 years.
Wow.
In the Bay Area. And I park, and, you know, I waddle out, you know. I got a sweatshirt.
Shivering.
Shivering. I walk in. Brooks is sitting there, you know. He's got USA Today. He's got the Tampa Bay Times in front of him. Three cell phones. This is Derek Brooks in action. The man's not even working. He don't even, you know, the storm folded. I don't know what he's doing with three phones.
The NFL he works for yet.
Yeah, NFL. But the season's almost over. He's got nobody to
that's
to,
true.
There's
nobody to pet to imprison.
Anyway,
he gives
me a nice greeting. He says, go get your coffee, Kaufman. It's up at the front. The waiter will be here in a minute. So we chat a little bit. We talk about Chucky a little bit. I said, did you know he was coming back? He said, I talked to him the night of the Ring of Honor, and I could tell that he was going to come back.
Mm.
He said, I didn't know it was going to be Oakland for sure, but I knew he was going to come back. I said, how's he going to do out there? How's he going to get along with McKenzie, the GM? He said, he'll do fine. They'll get along fine. He likes some of the coaching guys that Gruden picked, especially Edgar Bennett. Used to be a running back with the Packers.
Yeah, I was really surprised the Packers got rid of him.
And I believe he's the running back coach in Oakland, and Brooks thought that was a hell of a hire. We talked about the Bucks a little bit. I told him my Mike Smith story. I go, Derek, this is the kind of relationship I got with Smith. He calls me old man. He lets me, you know, ask the first question. And I said, I saw him in the locker room after the last game. And I said, Mike, the game I'm going to keep coming back to in this crazy season is the Arizona game, the first half, when I said to Mike Smith, Mike, I've been watching football for 40 years. That's the worst run defense I've ever seen, courtesy of your Buccaneers. Brooks goes, you said that to Smith? I said, yes, I did. What did he say? I said, well, the first thing he said was, well, they had a fresh running back in Adrian Peterson. I said, fresh running back? I said, Lee DeKemper would have averaged about 7 yards. Brooks started laughing because he knows Lee DeKemper. And he goes, only 5 yards, Kaufman, only 5 yards. And Brooks said, that's about as bad as I've seen it since the John Lynch Ring of Honor game, which was very famous because they were playing the Falcons.
And they were sick.
And that's the game that Brooks, Lynch, and Sapp could not look at the replays, couldn't look at the scoreboard because it was that bad. He goes, that's what it reminded me
of. I mean, I love Mike Smith to death, but gosh darn, he's not done a good job. I'm sorry.
You know, the waiter came by. Brooks ordered his white egg omelet. I'm over there with the corned beef hash, two over easy, a little French toast on the top, blueberries.
Hey, someone's picking up the tab. Why not,
You know, pancakes with strawberries.
Ira's rolling the dice he's not going to have to pay.
I'm thinking Brooks is picking up the tab. You know, the guy brought the pancakes. He forgot the strawberries. What am I going to do, DeKemper? We're the only ones in the dining room. We're the only ones. He forgot.
The gall of this person not to bring strawberries with your pancakes.
You know, Brooks picked up the tab. You know, there's no tab in that place. Yep. They never bring you a bill, Steve.
It reminds me.
What they say is, it's all on your bill, Mr. Brooks, on your monthly tab.
Yeah, it reminds me, my lawyer was a heavy hitter lawyer in St. Louis. And every once in a while, he'll say, meet me at my country club. And I'll go to the country club. I go up to the bar, order a Diet Coke. Yes, that's true. And I throw money on the bar, and I'm like, what's this? Yeah, what's this? This is money. Yeah, well, how much does it cost? Like, yeah, no, you just put it on Mr. Shikana's tab.
They don't use money at these places, Steve. Now, when you walk in, they want money up front because they know you got no credit. But in these places,
yeah, I got to pay an ante kind of thing.
You're paying an ante. So anyway, why was I having breakfast with Brooks to talk about John Lynch?
Oh, I thought maybe he was going to wanted you as an agent get you a job with the Bucs.
I've already spoken my piece, and he said I'll get a finder's fee, Mr. DeKemper. So he did help me a little bit. And what we came up with, and we're going to talk more about this next week, Steve, before I go to Minneapolis. But basically, it's a two-pronged argument. Number one, he was the third and very necessary part of a historic defense.
Sure.
The other two guys were already in. And Brooks was very adamant that he was as responsible as Sapp and I were. He had more responsibility than the two of us. The other part, Lee, and I, you know what? I don't have too much pride to say this. I'm going to lay a guilt trip on the other 47 people. Lynch has been waiting longer than anybody else that's going to be in that room that day before the Super Bowl. This will be his fifth straight time in that room. Nobody else has that. And all his contemporaries that have been in the room through the process, they're all in. So where's Lynch? Why isn't it Lynch's turn? He's obviously got a lot of support. He's back in the room. I think it's going to come down to him or Brian Dawkins.
Yeah.
Not both. One of those safeties are getting in. And, Steve, it's my job to make sure it's number 47.
Can I give people a teaser?
Go ahead, baby.
I will be on assignment on the next podcast. I'll be up in Minnesota.
Yes,
unfortunately,
you will.
We're going to be like ships
crossing. And I want you working on some of my fellow selectors. Slap them around a little bit.
Yeah, I can do that, yeah. You know, while I'm going to hound Jim Schwartz, I'm going to hound Chris Long, I'm going to hound LeGarrette Blount, I'm going to hound some other people.
Nice.
What the hell's going on with the Tampa Bay Bucks? At any rate.
And hound some of those selectors and say, give a little respect to Lynch.
Our ships will be passing in the night, but just to tease people, if I recall correctly, you have a significant heavy hitter in the NFL. Don't say his name. This is a tease. Didn't you have that you're going to break out in your presentation next week? Don't you have a significant NFL heavy hitter? When he talks, people shut up.
He happens to have a bust in Canton.
Among other things.
Among other things.
And he said that Lynch was the most important of that trifecta, that troika, then
nice.
Brooks and Sapp.
Nice. And he also said that he belongs in there before Brian Dawkins. Which will come up. One more thing Brooks said.
Well, speaking of Bustin' Canton, we're here at Hooters, which is our home away from home.
Whoa, what a segue by Isbitz. Unbelievable.
In Port Richey. And we've got plenty of Bucks.
These are bronze busts over there, Stephen Canton. LeBron's.
Right, I don't know what you're talking about. All right, go ahead.
You talk Hooters and Busts.
Now, one more thing that Brooks was upset, and I don't blame him. He is mad that Rondé Barber didn't make it into the room in his first year of eligibility. He goes, well, what are they thinking? And when I laid it on Brooks, what some of these guys are saying, nice little system corner, Brooks just shrugged, rolled his eyes.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't even know what that means. That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Dungy did not show by 9 o'clock. Brooks called Dungy, what's going on, coach? And Dungy had a family situation, medical, not involving himself, but a member of the family. Mm-hmm. So it was very understandable. And Dungy said, hey, tell Ira I'll take a rain check. So I might sit down with Dungy next week before
I – will he be in Minneapolis, Dungy?
I believe Dungy will be in Minneapolis.
I'll say this real quick. I know, I'm pretty sure I've said it before.
And Brooks will be in Minneapolis.
I'll say this right away. I think I've said it before. I'll definitely say it again. But the argument against Rondé that he was a system cornerback is as BS as it gets. I'll be very succinct when I say this. Joe Montana was my favorite quarterback. He was a system quarterback. He won. Lawrence Taylor, system linebacker. The greatest. He won. He's in the Hall. Same with Rondé.
It's a silly argument, Steve, but some very smart people are trying to throw it out there, and I'm rejecting it and throwing it back in their face.
Yeah, I get it from the standpoint of...
They're saying he's not a cover guy like Deion Sanders.
Well, like the guys Lee...
Who is?
Like the guys Lee mentioned, arguably they were the greatest at their position ever. Rondé Barber's not the greatest at his position ever, so when you look at him in that light and then you look at the system, it's easy for somebody on the surface to say that.
Somebody who didn't see Barber play a lot.
Pete Prisco.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's the greatest challenge with him is to convince these guys before you get to make the presentation, because if he doesn't make the final 15, then you never get to present him. So he becomes, until that time, he's a guy people vote for on paper, and on paper doesn't look as pretty as you want it to be and as you'll present it. So it's one of those cases we'll see.
And, of course, I'm the guy that's been pushing Brooks to get him into one buck place in some capacity. And DeKemper's the guy that's been pushing back. And you're kind of neutral on this, Steve, a little bit.
Oh, I'm all.
But I like the idea of another set of eyes and very wise eyes.
I'm all for bringing Derek Brooks in. I would take his resume over other people on Jason Light's staff for sure.
Why not Rondé?
And you know what?
I don't know what Rondé wants. Brooks is not an announcer. Rondé is.
Rondé is actually in Jason Light's kitchen cabinet. Like Lynch.
Yeah, he is. Yeah,
like
he is.
Lynch, he's been studying to be, it seems like he's been studying to be a front office guy, a guy in personnel. I don't know if Brooks has done that.
At the same time, Lynch, Rondé's getting better as an announcer. He's getting better.
Lynch and Rondé have done something that I don't know that Brooks has ever done. Because they're announcers, and Chucky was this way as well, because they're announcers, they go to these production meetings with coaches, with players. They're in team facilities. They see how other teams are working, what is working, what's not. That's why I put more value in Rondé and in Lynch. Of course, buddied up with John Elway, and John Elway took him under his wing for about 3 years.
And that's going to be a big advantage for John Gruden going into Oakland.
Yeah, and that's why I say, you know, people are like, why wouldn't you want Brooks and everybody want Barber? Because Barber has taken steps to be a personnel guy where – I don't know that Brooks has. Yes, I know he was in the AFL, so was Elway, but I don't think he's done as much background work. That's not to say he can't or won't. But
he learned the business side of football a little bit with the Storm. He, there's no question about it. He had a lot of plates he had to juggle with the Storm. They didn't have a big staff, Steve. You know that.
Sure. You know, we've learned and we've seen really that, and Barber's made some comments himself, that, you know, he's close with Jason Light and is involved in information that's shared freely, and they, I'm sure that they've taken his advice on some film things, or considered his advice is the way to look at it.
I've never heard Brooks say anything about getting into coaching, Steve. Never heard Brooks say anything about coaching.
Sure, but my point is that Barber, if he is in Jason Light's kitchen cabinet, look, they were all wrong on Ryan Smith, Brendan Hargrave, something happened there. So those are probably guys, I'm going to make a leap, that Rondé Barber had a hand in giving his opinion on. We don't know what he said.
And we don't know if they listened to him or not.
Right, but if they listened, if they did listen to him, then those guys really weren't good picks.
Or you could argue they listened to him, but they don't have the coaches to develop the guys.
Sure.
Which is my argument.
Yeah, it just makes it interesting on the surface there. But, all right, good. Ira, did Brooks smack you around a little bit, Ira?
Well, he didn't say anything that I should stop espousing him for a spot in a one-buck place. He didn't say, stop it. You're embarrassing yourself.
He'd be a great ambassador. Don't get me wrong. I just,
I just, the Bucks have to embrace their past, and as much as they talk about it, they haven't done a very good job of doing it.
Well, I think they need some fresh people in the building, and it's going to bring me to...
They've embraced it too much, you ask me, Lovey.
A guy this week that Ira was cut loose by his team. Now, there have been many guys of note, but let's hone in on the franchise. Jameis Winston, a guy who lost his job this week, is Brian Callahan. Who's Brian Callahan? Well, was Matthew Stafford's quarterback's coach the last 2 years. Before that, he was quarterback's coach in Denver. And you know, if John Elway hires you and brings you in on a staff and keeps you for a long time as a QB coach and on the offense, that speaks well. He's very well regarded, and now he's on the market.
Why'd they cut him loose, Stephen?
Well, Jim Caldwell got fired, and they hung on to him, and then they decided he's gone. I don't know what the new situation is.
So Patricia's going in there? I think Matt Patricia.
The point is that here's a guy. Are the Bucks going to even bring him in to talk to him? Because we all remember, we all sat there when Dirk Cutter called Matthew Stafford a top eight, I believe he said, quarterback in the league when the Bucks played the Lions this year. He raved about Stafford, raved about all the things they saw on film, getting a chance to study Stafford this year. And, sort of essentially Cutter was saying Jameis can learn a lot from this guy. Well, what about the guy that coached him and the guy that helped elevate him and who has a great reputation? Are they going to at least call Mr. Callahan to chat? Do you think that happens or they're set?
Lee, from what you and I know, and I don't want to speak for you here, DeKemper, but from the vibes that I've witnessed, they don't look like they're in any mood or inclination to change anybody on this staff.
Yeah, and that really depresses me. And I've written several of the stories that I think our listeners have read where I just use accountability in a Roman numeral of all, you know, Dick LeBeau. One of the greatest defensive coordinators ever. Not good enough for a team that won a road game. I'm sorry to remind you of that, Ira, but and people are wondering why I said that. Ira's a Chiefs guy. Wasn't good enough. And I can go on and on of both bad teams and good teams that got rid of assistants because they're not satisfied. Yet the Bucs, with one of the worst defenses in franchise history, apparently are satisfied. And it just drives me nuts. And just think about how times and maybe standards have changed. Ira, you remember as well as anyone. You were in the middle of it as far as recovering this story. The Bucks made it to the NFC Championship game, and they got rid of their offensive coordinator. How standards have changed. The Glazers apparently are okay with this. Again, I go back to this, and I like Dirk Cutter. I think he's a good coach.
Cutter, Lee, maybe Cutter's thinking this is the same staff that we went 9-7 with. Maybe that's the way he's looking at it.
That could be, but goodness gracious, how many teams, like I said, you know, the Titans, and I could go on and on. The Steelers got rid of their offensive coordinator. The Steelers, for goodness sake, put up all those points against the Jaguars defense. Not good enough for the Steelers. It's like, holy cow. I was one of the few people out in the wilderness saying Dirk Cutter should be retained. It was not popular because, again, he got 9 wins. Give him a chance to turn things around. And I like Dirk. I think Dirk's done overall. Obviously, I think he's done a good job. That's not very popular. Loyalty is a double-edged sword. It's both a trait and a curse. And this, to me, is an example of it being a curse. Optically, it looks terrible. Basically, the Bucks are saying to the season ticket holders, you know what? We think things are all right. We have no desire to change. Things are good. Cut that check.
You know, how about this, Steve? We haven't talked about this, but from a Jason Light perspective, the fact that the entire coaching staff looks like it's coming back, Light's got to be at wit's end. Not that he's going to go over Cutter's head to the Glazers. He doesn't operate like that.
Does he have the power to do
but
that?
But Light has to think, hey, me and my guys, we got good players on this team, and they underachieved last year, and the idea that the same coaches are coming back, it's got to piss off Light a little bit.
If fans could only see the pained look on Jason's face in the press box on road games, like the Atlanta game, like I saw him at Green Bay,
but you
he's
don't know
an
how
agony.
To interpret it.
He's
you
an
know
agony.
How, you don't know that that's a slap at the coach.
Oh, I have no idea why.
He's just upset and losing.
He is beyond upset. I mean, he's everything under his power not to scream. I mean, he's sick. He's absolutely sick. So if fans don't think the suits don't care, they haven't seen Jason after a loss on the road. I mean, the guy, he was absolutely sick
Steve,
at Green
Bay. In 2016,
Bay.
The guy was jumping into his pool every other week in celebration. Last year was a total year of misery.
Well, look, you've talked about this many times, Ira, the divide, the inevitable divide.
Inevitable divide.
And disagreements between personnel and coaching. Because, hey, the personnel guys, when the ball's kicked off, they're like the rest of us schlubs. You know, they can't call the plays.
Out of my hands.
They can't say, you know, what the hell is this guy doing on the field? They can't say, get Doug Martin out of there, you idiot. You know, they can't say those things that we can say. So there's an inevitable divide. And
the coaches are saying, we want better players, right?
Right. You know? So they stay unified, and the coaches say the same thing. You're the one who gave me these defensive ends, Ryan Russell, you know, Will Clark. So it goes all different directions.
And Will Clark is actually their best sack guy from the edge.
And you know, that's frankly one of the things that Light and Cutter need to get better at is this time of year, right now, what they do at the combine, how they handle evaluating these free agents, maybe get, and we've talked about they're not going to get different eyeballs in, but maybe they can approach free agency differently and maybe weight certain guys differently. I don't know.
I don't think.
The point to just right, finish on Brian Callahan, that's Bill Callahan's kid.
Callahan, very good offensive line coach.
Peyton Manning.
Coached the Raiders against the Bucks.
Yeah,
right?
Peyton Manning went out of his way after he was working with Brian Callahan to say that he will be an excellent head coach in this league someday, a phenomenal full-time quarterbacks coach and offensive coordinator, considered him a brilliant mind. It's just depressing if the Bucks don't even chat with the guy. Not even a chat, you know? Aren't you supposed to pick his brain, you know, and just learn stuff? They should be bringing in guys left and right.
To use the phrase you coined, Steve, status quo. And earlier today, I read an interview with Bruce Arians. He once again said, he goes, you know, I'm not going to coach again. I sure like to have my hand involved. I want to be involved. As Steve and I have both written and both talked about on the podcast, he's got a relationship with Jameis already.
That's a tremendous idea, DeKemper. You know, and he's got a great relationship with Light. He has a great relationship with Light's time in Arizona.
Okay.
He worked very closely with Light, and I remember being at Arian's table during the owners' meetings and asking him about Light, and he couldn't say enough about him.
Well, I know you were there the week leading up to a game. The opposing coach always has a teleconference call with local reporters. For example, when the Bucks were playing the Cardinals, Arians do a teleconference. You and I were both there, not this past one, but the year prior, and you could tell the affection he has for Jameis. Always called him by his nickname, you know, J-Boo, because he's known him since he was in high school. Obviously have a relationship. Bring him in. We know that the coach, and it drives coaches nuts, and I totally understand it because of the labor rules. Coaches can't have any contact with the players until they come in for off-season workouts beginning in April. So during this three-month, four-month period of dead time, let Arians work. You know, they should set some Arians and Jameis, you know?
And not only Jameis. What's wrong with bringing Arians in to have a think tank with Cutter? There's nothing wrong with that, Steven.
We could just start picking names left and right. They don't want to do it, and that's that, and we could be sick about it. But let's be straight. It's the end of January, and there's still time. So you know what? I'm not going to clobber these guys. For all we know, somebody shows up at $1, and we find out in a month that, hey, this guy came in for 2 weeks to study the crappy red zone offense or special teams because they started tailing off so horribly.
Now,
so
what
we'll
do know, allegedly, I heard on a Bucks podcast, they interviewed Chris Godwin, Bucks un-something. It's not uncensored, Bucks whatever.
Right.
Anyway, these guys are going to kill us because I can't remember the name, but Chris Godwin said that Jameis and Mike Evans and whoever else, he included himself in this, are scheduled to work out at Texas A&M because it's a marriage of convenience. Obviously, Evans from Galveston nearby. Clearly, Jameis and Jimbo Fisher are still tight. So they're going to be working out at Texas A&M this offseason together. Now, whoever joins them, I don't know. DeSean Jackson, I don't know. But there will be a time there Bruce Arians could join in possibly. Get him out of his retirement home office, his lakefront house in Georgia.
Steve, next week in our two podcasts next week, we'll delve a little bit more into the Lynch Hall of Fame thing. But also, I want to get some of your thoughts on your trip to Orlando because you're heading out in at least one day, maybe more, to the Pro Bowl.
Absolutely, yeah. We will talk about the Pro Bowl and the festivities and the game and the post game and all that kind of fun stuff. We saw a couple of weeks ago, we saw Jameis Winston on Instagram watching.
No, you're going here. Okay.
So, Ira, we've got Jameis Winston a couple of weeks ago watching the playoffs, and he's watching the Eagles, his beloved Eagles, his childhood team, and he puts out on Instagram for all to see, he's sitting on his couch apparently, and he's wearing an Eagles jersey. Now, let's put that aside for a second, and then we see on Twitter this past Sunday, Warren Sapp is shot a picture of him tailgating in Philadelphia. It was, I believe it was the NBC News affiliate. Nice tailgate shot of Warren Sapp. He's wearing an Eagles jersey.
Are you kidding me?
So I ask you.
The hated Eagles.
Warren Sapp. Now, Jameis has said for years that he's an Eagles fan. He's said that multiple times. His dad got him into the Eagles, Randall Cunningham videos and things like that. So I'm cool with Jameis doing it, even though it's weird. Let's just call it. It's
a little weird.
But Sapp, what do you make of all this stuff, Ira? Who cares what I think?
Come on, 99. Come on. There wasn't
a tailgate.
There wasn't a team you hated more 15 years ago, 17. They knocked you out of the playoffs 2 years in a row. They beat you in the regular season during the championship 2002 year. You closed down the Vet in style. Then you opened up Link in style, 17-0 that night. Boy, the 0-2, after that game, I thought the 0-3 Bucks might even be better than the 0-2 Bucks. We saw how that didn't materialize. But there was no team Sapp hated more than the freaking Eagles. And now, wearing Eagle colors, maybe I give Winston a pass, although I don't think I do. I don't like it. I don't want Winston wearing any other colors but pewter. But Sapp, come on, Warren.
To his credit, man. Jameis was sitting on his couch watching the game with his girlfriend at his side. It wasn't like Sapp going to a tailgate.
Let her wear Eagle colors. You got to wear Eagle colors.
Isn't it odd, though? I mean, could you ever imagine Tom Brady doing something like that or Drew Brees? It's just a little odd. And I don't begrudge Jameis being real. And I'm not telling the guy to not be a fan of his childhood team. He's 24 years old. But it's
a
little
odd. I guess the feeling is if the Bucks don't win it, he hopes the Eagles win it. I guess that's
a little weird. So next time you see Sapp, are you going to give him some crap, Ira? How does this go down?
I'm going to give him plenty. I mean,
he was doing it in support of Jerome Brown. Jerome Brown's gone.
Yeah. Jerome Brown's long gone. You showed me the picture now. Steve, I just can't get over it.
Show him the picture of Jameis.
I just can't get over it.
You know, it's basically, it's like sacrilegious here, you know? And Bucks fans have endured enough. They don't need to see Warren Sapp wearing an Eagles jersey and smiling about it.
And there's Jameis.
Now, one thing I wanted to run by you, I wrote about this on Tuesday on JoeBucksFan.com. I know you saw it. I clobbered Dirk Cutter, but it speaks to a bigger issue. Now, you're one of the few old school journalists who's a man of the people. You love pressing the flesh. You understand the fans. You go out to draft parties and do shots.
Ira's not stuck on an ivory tower.
So, Gerald McCoy, years ago, I think it was about 2 years ago now, he was asked about fans and, you know, fans saying players don't care. And McCoy has made the comment before, Ira, that players care way more than fans do. Nobody cares more than us. McCoy has said this. And I've always countered that with that's a pile of crap. Okay, because there are many fans, not all, not even most listening to this podcast, but they're hardcore, serious Bucks fans.
They live and die with the Bucks.
They live and die for 40 years with the team. They're spending money on tickets that they can't afford.
Players come and go.
These are people, the small percentage of fans who, you know what, Johnny's not going to the summer camp he wants to because we spend our money on season tickets. And these are diehards of the die. They live and die 24/7 with the team. And the players, like McCoy, think that, no, we care the most. Don't tell us we don't care. We care more than the fans. And, okay, that's from a player who's in the dirt. Now, Dirk Cutter, I was listening to him on the Buccaneers Radio Network, Ira, and he was asked a question about coaches and caring.
No, nobody parses words like you.
He says, you know what, fans, one thing fans don't really sort of understand is that, you know, they care, but coaches care. However much fans care, multiply that by 10 million, and that's how much the coaches care. And I said, Ira, my point was,
that's as bad as Light saying the fans thought we were going to score 50 points a game. Stop with the exaggeration.
I'm glad you're with me, because you know what? Dirk Cutter, when he's not the Bucks coach anymore, I'm assuming he's not going to win a Super Bowl. I hope he does. But if he doesn't win a Super Bowl here and he's gone in a couple of years, he ain't wearing Bucks colors ever again. He's not caring about the Bucks ever again.
He's in Pocatello.
He's doing his thing. and he's going to say that he cares 10 million times more than Joe Bag of Donuts?
They got a vested interest in caring.
Exactly.
They paid
exactly.
a lot of money.
Yes,
exactly.
He does.
In addition to us being fans, and I would even say that...
What's Port Richie Lou getting out of this?
Exactly.
Except a lot of agita. A lot of agita.
I'm going to play that rant of his for you. That is one of the most beautiful rants. January 10th, Justin Pawlowski, Bucks Uncensored, at the 22-minute mark, is one of the greatest rants of
Lou. Was it written out or just off the top of his head?
I'm sure it was off the top of his head. It was beautiful.
Ira, like
that stuff's crazy.
I'm calling a timeout. Like three podcasts ago, you asked the same question, whether it was written out or was it off the top of his head. Who gives a crap? It's his rant. I don't care if he pre-prepared it. I don't care if he worked on it for 3 weeks.
Rant. Call me, so I submitted a couple of proposals.
No, but seriously, I wrote this up, Ira.
That's crazy what you're saying.
Because
Steve,
to me, when a coach says the coaches multiply that by 10 million.
Now, not every Buck fan's a diehard.
No, that's why I said it's a small percentage of, let's just say there are 2,000 fans who live and die 24/7 with the Bucks.
All the paraphernalia.
All the gear, all the money that they can't afford. I mean, Dirk Cutter's making $3 million a year. Don't tell me that his investment in the team is greater than the guy spending $2,000 on tickets who's making $32,000 a year. I mean, come on. It pains me that coaches and certain just people in the NFL are so disconnected from the fans. How does that happen? I think it's a cultural thing from the Glazers to management to Jason Light, whatever. They don't get what the fans are about, and that's why they're there.
And that's why you're always pointing out how I'm a man of the people, DeKemper.
Well, Steve, didn't you point out last year when Dirk took his son to a sports bar on a bye week, and he just didn't get it, how everybody was like just so wrapped up and just in it, passionate and everything. And he was didn't he say that on his radio show? He was kind of taken aback.
Cutter had said on his radio show, Ira, that he went to during the bye week. It was his tradition. Of course, in 2017, there was no bye week. But in 2016, he went out with his son to watch football in a place like this, Port Richey Hooters kind of thing. And he just sort of said that he doesn't like, he was disconnected from the game, watching multiple screens and the TV shots and the fans everywhere and talking.
That's what we do.
So it was an interesting little nugget, but man, coaches,
well,
GMs.
We being Steve and I, you being the great journalist that you are, and I've told this to other people who, because of the way newspapers have gone, they're no longer in the industry anymore. But I tried to tell people that, you know what, without those passionate fans, we're all selling siding for a living. And so one of the biggest problems, I'm getting on a tangent here, I think with sport journalism in general, but sports journalism in particular, too much we looked upon our readers as subjects, not customers.
You know, Steve, I've mentioned it to you and Lee before, and you know it's true because you saw me in action over the years, but at training camp, the first day of training camp, I made it a point to write a fan story. Now, that's what training camp's all about. Guys,
it's like spring training. Hope.
So many of my brethren in the business
look down their nose.
Yeah, that they would be caught dead talking to Mrs. Johnson from Plant City. Mm-hmm. That's got season tickets with her husband for the last 24 years. She won't give it up. She's there first day of training camp. It's 98 degrees.
Yeah.
She's there. And Steve, anytime we feel jaded, and you it's easy to get jaded.
Unfortunately,
in our
it
business.
Is. Uh-huh.
You talk to these people. That you feel reinvigorated. These are the pure. There's a purity about
sure,
them.
Sure. And it's just the choice of words by Cutter. Really, is it just speaks to
disconnect.
Terrible disconnection. I wrote about this on Tuesday, and look at Lovie Smith. He doesn't care about the Bucks. He's gone. He got his money. He couldn't care less. You think there are tons of fans who would never think of acting like that. Greg Schiano, you think he's still cheering for the Bucks?
Oh, no.
John Gruden, he's out there telling people he never wanted to come here. And to say that coaches care 10 million times more, come on. It's about money. It's a job. They care. I'm not saying they don't care. Of course they do. But
if Chris Baker gets cut, is he going to ever think about the Bucks again?
Never.
Ever one thought about the Bucks again?
To be so disconnected from the hardcore fans, to say something like that, it just shows you don't get it. The coaches, I bet Dirk Cutter really believes that. There's no way that there are fans out there that care more than he does. And there are. There are people out there, and I'm not joking.
I thought he met him in person at One Buck.
Well, I was going to say, to be fair, Cutter, and I never saw a Bucks coach do this, the way he
greeted the stick carriers. He did. And that was really cool, and I thought that was touching.
I don't think he's anti-fan whatsoever. Just the mindset. I don't think Dirk Cutter necessarily realizes, and again, this goes probably around the league.
He's not alone. He's certainly not alone.
I don't think he realizes that there are fans listening to this podcast right now who would absolutely sign up to have three fingers chopped off in order for another Bucs Super Bowl.
Oh, there's all kinds of stories, and I can't think of the guy's name in particular.
Maybe another member of their body.
There's all kinds of stories, and there's one guy in particular, I can't think of his name.
Watch your appendages.
A Division I AA coach. He's in his 40s, but he made a ton of money in whatever business he was in. I mean, we're talking millions. And you know what? He said, this isn't my passion. This stinks. And he decided to quit his career and volunteer to hang out at a local small college. And he worked his way up, and now he's a 1AA coach, and he's successful because that was his passion. But he had the ability to do that because he had money in the bank.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to forget about my passion, and I want to go into aluminum siding like that guy and make $3 million.
But, guys, and I love to bring up Lou. I love Lou from Newport Richey. But Lou Newport Richey, I used to tell our brethren.
I thought it was Port Richey. Isn't he a Port Richey?
Port Richey. I'm sorry, Lou. Lou's a perfect example. This guy, he gets up every morning, goes to his job. I'm not even going to remotely say what his job is, but he wants to be with his family. He doesn't want to go to work, but he knows he has to support his family. He knows he has to do this. He just goes through this drudgery every day. He can't wait to get out of work. And when he comes home and he does his family duties, has dinner, the guy inhales as much Bucs information as he can before he goes to bed.
That's going on, Buccaneer.
And then I also say about guys that are stuck in a cubicle all day long. And those, God bless them, those are the guys that keep hitting F5 on their keyboard on JoeBucksFan.com waiting for another story to pop up. They can't wait to get out.
Steve, the idea that Port Richey Lou, who lives and dies with the Bucs and can't get enough of Joe Bucks Fan, that fills us with a lot of confidence that we're doing a lot of things right. Could be better, always.
I'm glad you're filled with confidence, Sage.
I'm filled with confidence.
And you know what, let's just end it right there.
I got good news for you. I just checked the weather forecast from Minnesota. Minneapolis, Wednesday, you're coming in on Thursday. So the day before, it's going to be a balmy 31.
Oh, I like it, Lee.
I'm going up there on Sunday, the teens for the high.
I think they got a blizzard today.
Better now than Sunday.
Just make sure you wear something under your trench coat.